KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Ava Grace Cummings discovered a possible medicinal therapy for a muscle disease that affects Native Americans. Logan Lee found a way to help control disease-carrying mosquitoes. And both of them did it while they were seniors in high school. They are among this year's winners of a celebrated science research competition. They join us to talk about their work coming up. We'll also hear about the enduring connection between the Choctaw Nation and Ireland. That's all after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is making new efforts to help solve missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. Now, the federal agency is using forensic technology to help reunite the remains of Native Americans with their families and tribal nations. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Federal data shows there are roughly 4,200 unsolved missing and murdered Indigenous persons. The BIA is working to bring that number down with the initiative Operation Spirit Return. The agency is partnering with a Texas-based company called Othram, which uses genetic genealogy to identify human remains. Gina Jackson is Western Shoshone and an advocate. She says any resource going towards this crisis is a good thing.
But the injustices are so huge and so vast that we need some big changes. We need to be protected. And right now, Native women and girls and Native people in general are not being protected.
The BIA did not respond to an interview request. In a recent press release, the agency says it's actively investigating 15 unsolved cases across tribal lands. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Human trafficking awareness and prevention was the focus of a community discussion last week in Eugene, Oregon. Among those attending were advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Junior League of Eugene organized the event, which was sold out with more than 150 registrants attending. Among them was Amanda Freeman, a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. She's testified in the Oregon legislature for bills to improve response and awareness of MMIP cases. Freeman also started Umpqua Advocacy last winter. It's a nonprofit organization that helps advocate for victims and their families through Native culture and practices.
I would rather save who we can by being who we are, and if we spread awareness, teach one new person one new thing, then that's something.
Freeman said she planned to talk to a presenter with the FBI on internet safety for young people. Meanwhile, organizer Sarah Koski, community resource liaison for Lane Transit District, said she was pleased with the event. She said it's an extension of a pledge LTD signed last November to help fight human trafficking.
So every one of our buses is a designated safe place for youth. We partner with Looking Glass, our downtown station, and our Springfield station as well. And what does that mean if there is a youth in crisis, if they run to our bus, how do we support them?
The Human Trafficking Hotline's 2023 data shows nearly 250 victims were involved in trafficking cases in Oregon, most of them female. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The San Carlos Apache Tribe in Arizona is offering a $75,000 reward for information in the murder case of Emily Pike. The teenager went missing in January. Her remains were later found. 12 News reports the reward was announced during a vigil held by the tribe over the weekend. Her case has drawn national attention as people from across Indian country call for justice for Emily and other MMIP cases. Tribal leaders are remembering Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona as a champion for Native people. He died last week after battling cancer. The Hopi tribe in a statement said the congressman was a true statesman, champion of the state of Arizona, and a friend to Indian country. Among accomplishments, the tribe says he helped with clean water projects, electrification efforts, and other investments. He also recently championed a water rights settlement for Arizona tribes. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin took to social media to honor the congressman, saying Grijalva was instrumental in protecting sacred lands, including the Grand Canyon. A candlelight vigil was held for the congressman in Tucson Sunday night. He was 77 years old. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Skugdash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Om Yeh.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Two Indigenous high school seniors placed in the top five of a prestigious high school science competition. Ava Grace Cummings researched a rare genetic disease that affects members of her tribe by incorporating traditional knowledge and Western science. And Logan Lee looked at a way to boost the control of disease-carrying mosquitoes. Today on our show, we'll talk more with these Native students about their projects. And later in the hour, we'll hear from a Choctaw author whose new book explores a Choctaw-Irish connection. We want to hear from you, too, with comments or questions for today's guests. Join the discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That number again, 1-800-996-2848. That'll connect you with our studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you can join the discussion. You can also leave a comment on our website or social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky Threads. Check them out. Joining us now from Durham, North Carolina is Ava Grace Cummings. She is a senior at North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics and placed second at the 2025 Regeneron Science Talent Search. She is Lumbee and Kohari. Ava, welcome to Native America Calling and congratulations.
Hi, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Ava. Also on our show today from Honolulu, Hawaii is Logan Lee. He is a senior at Iolani School, and he placed fourth at the 2025 Regeneron Science Talent Search. He is Native Hawaiian. Logan, congratulations to you as well, and welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Ava, I want to begin with you, your project. It focuses on a rare muscle disease. It's called STAC3 disorder. It was once called Native American myopathy. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so this is a disease that primarily affects my tribe, so the Lumbee tribe from Robeson County, North Carolina, and it's a musculoskeletal disease. So essentially, this disease is caused by a mutation in your STAC gene, and this has a lot to do with muscle contraction pathways, and it causes a lot of issues with muscle development and muscular strength in individuals that have it, and it affects around one in every 5,000 Lumbee individuals.
Now, what motivated you to pursue this research?
Yeah, so I did my research through a research program at my school, and I was very interested at looking into a disease that was specific to me. And so I was aware that this disease is something that affected my tribe. And also, I do have a few family friends that have the disease. So it was definitely something I was interested in looking at, and then also being able to find some kind of treatment or taking the first steps towards a treatment by bridging some of the traditional practices of my tribe and herbal remedies that we use with some of the more modern fields of medicine today.
And Ava, I want to ask you about how your project bridges Western and traditional medicine, but I also want to ask you a little bit more about STAC3. What are the symptoms, and somebody who's dealing with that disease, what is the toll on the body? What's the impact?
Yeah, so an individual who has STAC3 has issues with, one, muscle contraction, seeing as STAC3 primarily affects a muscle contraction pathway. And so this causes them to have general weakness, poor muscle development called hypotonia, so just poor muscle formation and development from birth. And then it can also come with like facial deformities and things like that. So this can really impair their movement and just ability to perform everyday tasks.
Now, as you mentioned already, the project bridges tradition with Western science. Tell us more about how you were able to weave those two disciplines and how it all factored into the results of the research.
Yeah, so looking at the pathway that STAC3 affects, I basically was looking for different kinds of treatments that can target certain aspects of this pathway and kind of compensate for the issues that are being caused by STAC3 disorder. And so I have a book called Herbal Remedies of the Lumbee Indians. And so I basically looked through this book. It's like an encyclopedia of a lot of different plants and herbal remedies that we use and what we use them for. And so through this book, I was able to identify an herb called common nettle. And I was able to use an extract from this herb in my project and just investigate if it was able to remediate some of the symptoms that relate to your muscles caused by STAC3. And so then aside from that, I also used a modern drug called tirasemtiv that's being developed by pharmaceutical companies towards sclerosis treatment. But I was interested in applying that towards STAC3. And so in my project, I looked at both of these treatments individually and then also a combination of these treatments to see if they were effective in remediating some of the symptoms of STAC3. And I was able to find that when you combine both of these treatments, in certain contexts, they are more effective at remediating some of the symptoms of STAC3, one of them being muscular output and muscular efficiency. And so that really just shows how both traditional knowledge and modern medicine can work in tandem to solve a lot of the problems that we're having today, and especially in underserved or rural communities.
Absolutely. And Ava, how long did it take you to conduct your research? And tell us a little bit more about the methodology you used.
Mm-hmm. So my research was done over the course of 1 year. So it started January 2024 and wrapped up in December of 2024. And so I did it all through a high school research program. It was all conducted in my high school labs. And so it was also independently guided. So I just identified the problem I wanted to look at. I spent several months doing a lot of background research. STAC3 is very under-researched, so that was definitely a challenge I had to overcome in just being able to understand the disease in itself. And once I was able to build that understanding, kind of set that frame, then I was able to design my experiment. And so I spent several months establishing a model of STAC3 in an invertebrate. So I basically genetically did some genetics work with fruit flies to model STAC3, and that allowed me to test the effectiveness of both of the treatments I used and the combination of the treatments in remediating the symptoms of STAC3. And so after I ran through all of my experiments, I looked at the ability of the treatments to remediate some of the symptoms, both in larva and in adult fruit flies. And so after I was able to run all those experiments, I collected all that data, did a lot of data analyzation with R programming. And so from there, I was able to kind of draw my conclusions and see my findings. All of the treatments worked. The combination of the treatment worked best for the larva, and then also the herbal remedy on its own worked best for the adults. And so I was able to put together all of my research, present at a lot of different conferences, one of them being the American Indian Science and Engineering Society Conference, which was in San Antonio this year. And so I was able to just kind of share my research with a lot of different indigenous professionals and also just professionals from around the nation and just bring awareness to STAC3 population-specific diseases and then also the use of traditional medicine.
Ava, I think a lot of our listeners will remember using fruit flies in high school science classes. I know we did some experiments with them as well. What was it about the fruit flies that made them an ideal test subject for this research?
Yeah, so first, I needed to use an invertebrate model, just given like the regulations for my research and like for my school. And so the advantage of using fruit flies is that it's very easy to manipulate a lot of their genetics. So I was able to establish a model that specifically displayed STAC3 and some of its symptoms. And it was also just they're pretty easy to work with and just administering treatment. So this was definitely just a way for me to, one, just kind of investigate how STAC3 works and then also the effectiveness of the treatments. And other model organisms that you could use for STAC3 include mice, but that would definitely be like a next step type of thing.
Okay. Now, you shared earlier approximately 1 in 5,000 Lumbees are afflicted with STAC3. In fact, you actually know some people who are. What is their response? What are you hearing from other tribal members and in fact, the actual Lumbee tribe itself in terms of just what this research, what the potential could be ultimately?
Yeah, so after I received the award, my tribe actually like reposted it on Facebook. And while I was going through like some of the reposts, I saw one from a lady who said she had been like really touched because her child has this disorder. And I think that was just really encouraging for me to see that my research is reaching the intended audience and that it's making an impact on their lives and that they're seeing that awareness towards something that they've had to deal with, but that hasn't had a lot of contributions from science and just the healthcare world in recent times.
Now, what's the next step here in terms of the research that you have undertaken and the conclusions that you have met? What's the next step? Are you going to continue with this research, or are some other people going to continue with it?
Yeah, so after high school, this is definitely something I'm interested in continuing in college. So maybe finding like an independently funded like research program or something through the university that I choose to go to. That would definitely allow me to continue with some of my research here. And I'm definitely interested in looking at STAC3 on a more like molecular, cellular level. A lot of my project was very, very behavioral. So being able to get a little more insight into kind of the molecular cellular level of the treatments that I'm using and also the disease in itself, I think would yield a lot more knowledge and information specifically about STAC3 and how it functions and also allow for more progression towards getting treatments that are accessible to individuals who have this disease.
Ava Grace Cummings kicking off our conversation here today on Native America Calling. She recently placed second at the 2025 Regeneron Science Talent Search. She's also a senior at North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics. So we're going to talk more with Ava when we come back from this break. And we're also going to talk with another winner of the Science Talent Search. His name is Logan Lee, and he joins us from Honolulu, Hawaii. So if anybody would like to join this conversation, maybe you would like to congratulate one of these young people on our show today, one of these extraordinary young people, you can do that. Or maybe you're interested in this research and you've got some insights to share as well. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's the number to the studio, 1-800-996-2848. What are you waiting for? Give us a call. An Ojibwe 20-something has the ability to navigate the spirit world, an ability that gets him into trouble as he confronts a shadowy, malevolent figure that lurks in his tribe's casino. We'll hear more about the protagonist in Dennis Staples' newest book, Passing Through a Prairie Country, on the next Native America Calling.
Trickster Cultural Center, an authentic first voice of Native American veterans and cultural arts, will host the 2025 Summer Youth Powwow to foster community relations, youth literacy, cultural exchange, and provide local community resources. Trickster Cultural Center's Summer Youth Powwow is open to the public at no charge and takes place May 31st in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at TricksterCulturalCenter.org/summer-youth-powwow-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show.
Thanks for tuning in today to Native America Calling. We're hearing from two exceptionally talented high school students who were recognized for their scientific research. In both cases, their work looks into ways to prevent diseases that affect Native people. If you'd like to join the show today with comments or questions, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our first guest, Ava Grace Cummings, researched a rare genetic disease known as STAC3 that afflicts Lumbee people. Ava, tell us a little bit more now about the competition. What motivated you to actually take this research from what you were working on in high school, enter this big national competition, place second, you won a big award. I mean, it's just so exciting. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so my school has a pretty large research program here, and a big part of like the conclusion of our research is the opportunity to present and bring awareness to our research and what we're doing and our interest. And so one way for me to do that was through the Regeneron Science Talent Search. So I was able to write up a research report on all of my research, and then also a couple like personal essays about me, and then submit that to the application for the Regeneron SES. And I heard back in early January that I had been selected for the top 300. So me, along with a few other students from my high school, were in this pool of 300 students. And then a couple days later, the top 40 were announced. And so once I was selected for top 40, I was able to prepare for the Regeneron Science Talent Search finalist week. And so this is where all 40 of us went to Washington, D.C. And so we went through 6 rounds of panel judging. So essentially how this judging works is we went into a room with three PhD level like scientists who asked us questions in different disciplines ranging from biology to astrophysics. And so they were definitely really challenging, but it was essentially for the judges to gauge our thought process and how we were thinking. And so after these 6 panel judging rounds spread across 2 different days, we then had project judging. And so the same judges came around to our posters, and we were able to communicate our research with them and then also answer any questions they may have had. And so that lasted for around 3 hours. And then at the conclusion of all of that, we had a few days during the week to kind of explore DC. We went and saw some of the monuments. We also went on field trips to different places. I went to this place called the Genalia Research Institute, about 45 minutes outside of DC. And so they do a lot of neurology type work. And so that was definitely really interesting to see. And it was a very beautiful research campus. And I got to hear from some current scientists there about the research they were doing. And then at the conclusion of that, we got ready for the gala. And then that's when you could see all of us on TV standing up on that stage, all 40 of us. We were all honored for our accomplishments and making it up to this point. And then the top 10 were announced from there.
This all, it sounds just, it's really intense the way you describe it in that panel with these people with PhDs. Ava, have you always had a passion for science?
I have, yes. Since I was very young, I've been involved with science fairs from a young age, like starting in elementary school. I did them all throughout elementary and middle school, took a break during like COVID, and then this past year I was able to pick it back up. And I've always had a curiosity for different disciplines in science, but I think with my current project, that's definitely kind of set the direction for where I want to go in my career.
Well, tell us what's next. You're going to graduate this spring. We talked a little bit before the show. I think you have plans to go to Yale. What are you going to pursue as a course of study, and what are some of your long-term goals?
Yeah, I'm interested in one, majoring in biomedical engineering for undergrad, and I've also had thoughts of maybe double majoring in something like a humanities, like maybe American history or something. I've had an interest in that lately, and I think afterwards I would want to maybe go to law school. I'm definitely interested on working on the policy side of medicine, and I really want to be able to serve indigenous communities and specifically my own indigenous community in the future through like advocacy, but also through just research and lawmaking.
Ava, congratulations again. You make us all so proud. Good luck going forward, okay?
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Let's hear now from Logan Lee. He joins us from Honolulu, Hawaii, where he is a senior at Iolani School. He placed fourth at the 2025 Regeneron Science Talent Search. Logan, thank you again for joining the show. Welcome. And we just heard Ava talk about her work with fruit flies, and you zeroed in on a different insect. Tell us about your project and why you chose to focus on mosquitoes.
Yeah. So in Hawaii, mosquitoes carry avian malaria, which has already caused the extinction of over 30 of our native Hawaiian forest birds. And these native species, or native Hawaiian forest birds, are really important to native Hawaiian culture. They feature in our mo'olelo, or our stories, and our cultural practices. So when we lose these forest birds, we also lose this really key part of our native Hawaiian culture. And so I wanted to look at a way we could better improve the mosquitoes so we could better conserve our forest birds. And so scientists in Hawaii are using a mosquito control method called the Wolbachia IIT, where essentially they release sterile male mosquitoes into the wild. And so these mosquitoes are male, so they can't bite or spread disease. And they're also sterile, so they can't reproduce with wild females. So they're competing with these wild males so that they take their places with wild females and don't reproduce. And I was looking at a way we could improve their fitness so that they can compete with wild males better.
Well, tell us more about this methodology, and what is the end result? What is the goal of this research?
Yeah, so in order to improve the fitness of these sterile male mosquitoes, I looked at introducing beneficial bacteria. And so these mosquitoes are grown in these sterile environments and laboratories, and they're not really able to gather beneficial bacteria. And so I looked at a way we could transplant bacteria from the wild into these mosquitoes so that we could provide them with benefits and improve their fitness. And I found out we were able to both quicken the developmental rate of the mosquitoes, how long it takes it to grow to the adult stage, and also improve the survival at the adult stage. And so what I think this means is that we're able to improve the Wolbachia IIT, and that means that we can better conserve our forest birds. The mosquito control techniques we use will be more effective, and that means that we can bring down that mosquito population faster to protect our endemic species.
Awesome. Logan, what was it about this research that drew you to not only just complete this project, but also just, again, take on such a big undertaking?
Yeah, I think just learning about this issue in my community, about the forest birds that are going extinct, and then having the opportunity through research to be able to make a difference. Because I think we hear a lot about these big issues, whether it be conservation or diseases in our community, and oftentimes as youth, we're not really sure what we can do about it. But being able to make this contribution to my native community to really make a difference and protect a piece of our culture, that was what was really special about this research to me, to be able to take that action towards Indigenous conservation.
And what's next? Are you going to continue this research in some format?
I'd love to be able to continue the research, I think, maybe into college, similar to how Ava described, or at least publish parts of it so that the information is out in the world for researchers to use in the future. I think just being able to provide the information to others so that they can use it, that would be really special.
Now, we heard Ava describe the competition, going before the panel, having to defend her research. Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, so it was definitely, I think, a very new environment coming from Hawaii. I mean, even the travel itself was about 18 hours. And so it was really incredible to be able to be there with all of these 39 other youth scientists. And then going through the judging, I think you meet these PhD-level scientists that are so incredible. They have these backgrounds in science, they're really experienced, and the judging definitely was pretty challenging, but I think you learn so much about yourself, about the fields of sciences that you maybe haven't touched on as much, and that's really important as a scientist to have those general fields of knowledge. And so, yeah, I think that was really cool. And then being able to talk about my research, about the research that I did in Hawaii that's so special to my community and to me, and then sharing it with people on the continental U.S., that was really cool because I think I'm really taking it to the next level, being able to show why this research is so important to the people in my community and talk about it to people that maybe haven't heard about conservation issues in Hawaii.
Logan, you and Ava are the first two Indigenous winners of this competition. Does that have any extra meaning for you?
Yeah, I was not aware of that fact, but that's really cool. I think that that really means that we should have more Indigenous students joining this competition, performing research in there to support their communities. And I hope that it inspires, yeah, other Indigenous students to be able to do the same so that they can also make an impact in their community and have these incredible experiences.
Now, has science always been a passion of yours? I asked Ava the same question. Is it something that you've been involved with your whole school career?
I think it's definitely been a subject that I've been drawn to from a young age. I remember in elementary school loving learning about whether it was invasive algae or human biology, just the different subjects that we would talk about in our science classes. And then in sixth grade, I actually did participate in a science fair looking at invasive algae in our community. So I think research and science has always been something that I've been drawn to because I really see how it has the ability to make a difference and impact the communities that we live in and the people that we care about.
Logan, who are some people in your life that that you admire and provide inspiration for you?
I would definitely say that my research mentor, Dr. Maderos and Ms. Waianuhea at the University of Hawaii, they inspire me every day to continue finding solutions for issues that I see and to perform research, especially with a cultural integrity, not just thinking about can I do this, but also is it culturally correct? Is it something that I should be doing? Is it something that will help my community? And also my teacher, Dr. Chan, has just been so inspirational throughout the research process and also in my life. I think also my parents, who have always pushed me to improve, to look into science and to do things that I'm interested in.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got our first caller on the line. This is Celeste, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on station KUNM. Celeste, thank you so much for calling in today. I think we spoke a little bit earlier on the phone.
We did, Sean. Yes, this is a wonderful program. Congratulations to Ava and Logan. I am so impressed with you guys, with your smarts, your being so, talking so clearly and winning these prizes. It's just great. It warms my heart. I volunteer in the Albuquerque Public Schools, and I help kids who are having trouble. And to see the other end of this and you guys being so successful, it's fantastic. And I just wish you continued success in the next step of what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste. Really appreciate that phone call there. And well, Logan, Celeste asks or wishes you best of luck in your next stage, your next steps. What are your plans for the future when you graduate here this spring and then next year and beyond?
Yeah. Thank you, Celeste, for the kind words. I'm currently undecided on college, but I'm planning to attend, and I'd really love to go into some biological or environmental field where eventually I'll be able to perform more research as a career, I think, and find more solutions to these issues that we find in our communities and see in the people that we care about. I think following research eventually as a career, turning this project into something I can do for a job would just be incredible, and that's what I'd love to do in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to the science and the research and all of your accomplishments, you also advocated for your school to rename Discoverer's Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. Tell us about that undertaking, Logan, and what inspired you to take on a social justice issue like that.
Yeah, so I think one thing that really stood out to me is that we haven't moved from certain ways of attributing, like, I think, that we should. And so, for example, calling the day Discoverer's Day when we should really be appreciating the Indigenous peoples and our ancestors, the people that came before us and did the real discovering in Hawaii, that came to Hawaii, because these, I think, European colonizers didn't really discover anything. They came to places where people already inhabited, and giving them any sort of appreciation or spotlight really isn't what we should be doing. And so being able to make that change, at least in my community, to instead appreciate our Native Hawaiian and Polynesian ancestors, the people who have been in these, who have inhabited these islands for centuries before any European colonizers came along. I think being able to give them a day to celebrate them in my community, that was something that I really cared about. And so there was a group of faculty that was interested in changing Discoverer's Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And so that was something that I was just able to contribute to. I did like a survey on whether people, when they heard Discoverer's Day, if they thought of European navigators or if they thought of Polynesian navigators. And most people said that they thought of European colonizers, which makes sense. But in the Hawaii legislature, they call it Discoverer's Day because they're honoring the Polynesian navigators that came along. And so if we're trying to honor these Polynesian navigators, but people aren't thinking of it as honoring the Polynesian navigators, rather the people that came along later, the European colonizers, I think there's really a change that needs to happen. And so being able to support that change in my school and my community, that was something that I really cared about and I'm really proud of having been able to do.
Right on, Logan. It's just wonderful to talk with you and hear your words, hear your wisdom for such a young person. Best of luck going forward and congratulations again, okay?
Thank you.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break and we will be right back. Stay with us, folks.
Support for law and justice related programming provided by Hobbs Strauss Dean and Walker LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, it's important to act fast and start hands-only CPR. Call for emergency medical help and an AED. Push hard and fast in the center of the chest, giving 100 to 120 compressions per minute until help arrives. Learn more from the American Heart Association about the life-saving skill of CPR at heart.org/nation. The American Heart Association supports this show.
Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org. Support for this program provided by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, the business, the tribes, and the communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
We're glad you're listening today to Native America Calling. Right now, we want to recognize that many people are thinking about the country's connection to Ireland today. And we want to highlight one notable connection between the Choctaw tribe and the country of Ireland. And if you'd like to join the discussion with a comment or question, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Texas is Leslie Widener. She is the author of the children's book, Kindred Spirits. She's also a member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Leslie, hello, and it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Halito, thank you.
Halito, well, we've talked about the history between the Choctaw Nation and Ireland on our show before, but for our listeners who might not be so familiar, can you give us a brief history of that connection?
The Choctaw Nation had just finished going over the Trail of Tears, and they crossed from like 1831 to 1834, so it hadn't been long before the Irish had a potato famine. And they heard about it through a meeting in their newly formed community center, or it was the Choctaw Agency. And it was in the early 1840s, and they heard about it from a newspaper article that the Friends had put in the newspaper and collecting all the data on who donated to the Irish Nation for the potato famine. And the Choctaw Nation had given $170, which is equivalent to about $5,000 now. And they forgot about it until the Irish Nation communicated with them in the late 90s and found out that they had donated this money and what it meant to the Irish Nation, and how several decades after it happened, they were talking about it and putting it in their education in Ireland so the children knew about it. And late 1990s, they commissioned a sculpture by Alex Pintack, who's an Irish sculptor, to do a big sculpture of 20-foot feathers made out of metal for their park in southern Ireland in County Cork. So that's kind of when I heard about it, was when the Choctaw went over to receive this honor and see the sculpture, and a delegation went over to dance, and it was really a big celebration. And I was working at the Choctaw Nation then, and I had some friends tell me about it. And that was really the first I heard about it, was in the 2017. So that's kind of how the whole thing started.
This is some really fascinating history, and it brings us up to the present. There's also a connection to COVID-19. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Yeah, so I had thought that this would make a nice nonfiction picture book when I first heard about it, but I couldn't come up with a good story, a circle, basically, to be enough for a picture book. So then COVID came, and it kind of came together, because now it was a pay it forward story. And I listened to a podcast, or it was a news article or something during COVID, and there was some women from the Navajo Nation that were raising money for the hardships that they had in southwestern United States with COVID, because they were suffering really badly. So these women were talking about having a GoFundMe, and they weren't expecting to raise that much money, but then they suddenly started getting all these donations from Ireland. And one of them came in and said, "I think we're being hacked."
they didn't understand why, because nobody, it wasn't a well-known story. And they started, they found out. That's kind of when it came out in the news that the Irish were donating, well, and then in my book, I talk about 3 million, but it actually exceeded that by the time it was all said and done, what they did to help the Navajo population.
This is just really fascinating. I'm looking at the book online right now. I was, you folks shared a copy, a digital copy with me. And let's talk more about this project. I mean, it's just got beautiful illustrations. It's loaded with this history and these facts that you've described for our listeners. And Leslie, tell us a little bit more about, you know, again, taking this history, this really, really powerful moment in your Choctaw people's history, but also with regard to the Irish and condensing it all into a children's book. What prompted that?
Well, since I was kind of learning about the story as I was writing it, I was just thinking, you know, how, like you said, how powerful it is that this this act that, you know, we just donate, you know, just as individuals will donate to this or that, not really think about it. But a lot of times it's this long future in one single donation. You don't know where it's going. You don't know how it's really, how it's going to be used and how it is something that will come back around. This is seven generations away from that first donation when COVID hit the United States. And, The story is just to me kind of amazing, and the fact that it helped with the Navajo and Hopi Nation a lot, but it's not just, it didn't just stop with that. The Irish went on to give up their World Cup spot in lacrosse to the Haudenosaunee lacrosse team because of paying it forward. And that it just kind of keeps going, and it shows that you never know when it stops. And as far as the illustrations, I was really adamant about having not just talked on Irish representation in this book. I really, really wanted a Navajo or a Hopi illustrator. And Charles Bridge, who is the publisher, had somebody they worked with, and it was Johnson Yazzie, and his illustrations just made it beautiful. I mean, I liked the story a lot. I still love the story, but his illustrations, I told him that if no one picked this book up because of the words, they would pick it up from the illustrations. They're just beautiful.
I totally agree. Yeah, they really, really do pop. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls now. We have two people on the line. First up is Maria, listening on KUNM in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Maria. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi. How are you doing?
We're doing great. I understand you are Irish.
Yes, I'm over here living in Santa Fe. I came over from Galway on the west coast of Ireland, and I came over late 2023. I'm studying here. So I've been here for about 2 years.
Well, tell me this history with regard to the Choctaw and your people during the potato famine. Were you familiar with it? Did you learn about it growing up?
Yeah, I've been familiar for a long time about it. I guess my connection and love of the native cultures here is because we have a background of indigenous culture in Ireland, really, in terms of, you know, our pagan heritage and our land-based culture. So, you know, that we always kind of knew about it. And, I mean, it was an unbelievable thing that happened, really, considering it was around the time of the Trail of Tears. So a lot of the nations were really suffering in the States at the time. And to be able to gather together that money to send over to Ireland was just unbelievable, really, because what was happening was, you know, less than a potato famine, really, and probably, you know, more of a genocide of sorts, really, you know, as food was being shipped out of Ireland at the time. So to get something like that was just amazing, and the sculpture is just fantastic as well. So I'm so proud to have the connection, really, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Maria, are you visiting in Santa Fe, or are you working, living there temporarily, permanently? What's your story?
Yeah, well, I'm living here. I'm going to college here at Southwestern College here in Santa Fe. I'm studying art therapy, counseling, and I came all the way specifically to be here. But my love of the land of America goes back a lot longer, really. I've been coming and going to the States for a long time and doing many road trips and traveling across country, really, through the landscapes and really appreciating the landscapes and, you know, the hardships that people have gone through here. And so the connection between Ireland and the native cultures here really drew me over. You know, that's why I came.
All right. Well, Maria, I really appreciate you calling into the show today, and I'm glad to know that you're a fan of NAC. Let's take another caller. This is Chanupa. He's in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, listening on Keeley Radio. Big Brother, what's your take on the Irish Choctaw connection?
You know, I have an older brother and a little brother in over their country, but what I wanted to talk about is about this book called The Top Tito is about the people between blacks and Indians. And I think that teacher that's talking about you, she probably knows that. And the Top Tito is what they did for our black people. We took them in, and then we took care of them, and they blended in with our people. And so that's what a great – and I was hoping Junior would be talking on the show, but he couldn't get in it. But that's okay. It's okay. I'm talking about Junior, so he's the one that speaks of it all the time, the Top Tito. And when you hear about it, you can hear it. So, like we say in Lakota, le oap heki le nahakti oyate hena oispapi. Wakanja chik chik ala hena hechune chumpi. Ohe woap heki e yake. So, see, our children continue to like books like the kids today and like that lady's talking about. That's really beautiful. And thank you, Sean, for taking my call. Wopi la tunki chiki. Aho.
Appreciate you calling in, Big Brother. Leslie, our caller, Chanupa, he mentions some other books and some other Choctaw historical events or dynamics. Are there any other stories that you're looking to write or document in children's books in addition to what you've done with regard to the potato famine?
The Chanupa was, it's a nonfiction. And I'm getting ready to write some fiction for a change. I mean, I love nonfiction, but it's hard. It takes a lot of research. And so I'm kind of delving into something on what we call the Green Onion Feast, the Green Onion Dinner, and a lot of tribes celebrate this. And so I'm writing one, and I'm also going to illustrate it.
What's the feedback so far from the book that you've written, Kindred Spirits, that we're talking about today? Is it being used in classrooms?
I believe so. I am going to be on a panel at the Texas Library Association in April. So I think it's getting a lot of feedback. I'm on several lists, and I'm really happy about that because that means librarians are liking the book, and that means they're going to have it for their children. And I hope teachers are doing the same.
Now, I've talked about this before on the show. I'm really fascinated by children's books. I have a young daughter. We read a lot of kids' books. And I'm really intrigued by what makes a really great children's book, because it's not easy to write a really good one for kids. What's your secret?
Well, I don't know that I have a secret, but I think you have to really enjoy your subject and be willing to give it all your time. And especially on a nonfiction, it takes a lot of research, a lot of reading, and it takes a long time to write one because of wanting to get your facts straight and having people vet it and make sure you haven't made any glaring mistakes. That's very important with nonfiction. It's also important with fiction, too, because you can talk about things that you don't know very much about, and somebody will catch you on it.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to write Kindred Spirits?
Well, I started in 2020, and by the time it was sold, it was
2022, I think, but it took a while longer to come out. It didn't come out until 2024 in July. Because obviously the illustrator needs a lot of time. His paintings, he doesn't paint on a computer. I mean, his paintings are gorgeous, and they're huge. So he had to paint them and then photograph them, and it takes a while.
Did you visit Ireland as part of the process?
No, and I was planning on going this year, and circumstances have made it where I'm probably going to have to put it off for a year, but I'm going to go for sure.
All right. Leslie, I want to ask you one more question, and we're going to have to wrap up the show. For any other Irish people who might be listening to our show right now, what would you like to tell them?
Well, thank you for remembering. I mean, the Choctaw didn't really know about this till late in the game, and I knew nothing about it growing up. So I really want this story to come out because it's so important, and I think it's important for everyone to realize that one little thing you do can make such a world of difference. And just the whole pay it forward notion is wonderful, and I hope it continues.
I hope it continues as well, Leslie. And with that, we are unfortunately out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up this conversation. But to our three guests who joined us today, thank you so much. Leslie Stahl Widner, Ava Grace Cummings, and Logan Lee. We'll be back again tomorrow to hear about two news books by Native authors Dennis Staple and Marcy Rendon. I'm Sean Spruce. We'll talk again soon.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
I don't want nobody if I can't have you.
I can't have